One of the common denominators of the conflicts that I covered was bigotry as a superficial.
This is KUT. I'm David Brown of the Texas Standard. Imagine everything you've learned about who you are, where you came from, is part of an elaborate fabrication, a fiction. What would you do to reclaim your true backstory? Chris Tomlinson decided to go back in time. Tomlinson is a fifth-generation Texan. His ancestors founded Tomlinson Hill, a community in Falls County. They were also slave owners. What he discovered about his family shook him to the core and led to his new book, Tomlinson Hill. Chris writes for the Houston Chronicle, and I know you used to be an AP reporter in Africa for many years, Chris. Was there something that happened there that made you want to revisit your own history?
Justification for the conflict, with a struggle for power and privilege being the true motivation. I was privileged to witness the end of apartheid in South Africa, and I later covered post-genocidal Rwanda. And as I watched these countries struggle with the crimes of the past, the one thing I came to realize was that the only way to have true reconciliation was to have a shared, commonly accepted sense of the past, of the truth of what actually happened.
So you felt that you needed to do this for yourself, or this was part of a larger project that you imagined?
Well, after watching perpetrators of human rights violations and crimes against humanity confess what they had done in South Africa and Rwanda and be confronted by the victims of those crimes, I realized that this was a process that we've never really had in the United States. That when I was growing up, we still didn't talk about who perpetrated slavery or who perpetrated Jim Crow. We just accepted it as a fact of life. And after growing up and having my grandfather talk about how glorious the family history was, even though we owned slaves and we maintained sharecroppers up until the 1970s, I realized that I needed to do some digging and get to the bottom of what my family's role was in that part of American history.
Well, let's go back. Let's talk a little bit more about your family. Your parents, I understand, were, how would you characterize them? Liberals?
Yes, I think my both my parents are and were proud liberals. They supported Sissy Farenthold when she ran for governor. They supported George McGovern against Richard Nixon in 72.
Right.
And so I grew up in a liberal household, and that was in direct contradiction to their parents, who freely used racial epithets and were much more conservative.
Well, what did they tell you about your family's history? Were they more circumspect about the slaveholding past, or?
My father didn't really want to talk about it. He was enamored with his mother's family history. They were Swiss Germans who'd settled in Dallas and started a barbershop and a beauty supply company. But when it came time to talk about the Tomlinsons, my grandfather was quick to point out, you know, our family owned slaves and they loved us so much they took Tomlinson as their last name. And then my father would wince. And he would only go as far to say, well, Tomlinson Hill isn't that much of a hill, and maybe that's not the real reason they took, the black Tomlinsons took our name.
This was something that you carried with you and wanted to re-examine.
I first thought about this when my grandfather was telling me these stories in 1972, when I was a little kid and living in Dallas during the beginning of busing and desegregation of Dallas schools and the busing riots of Boston. This was also the same year that a teacher played a tape of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech in class.
Right.
And when I heard the line, you know, I have a dream that one day the sons of slaves and the sons of slaveholders will come to, you know, will come together on the red hills of Georgia at the table of brotherhood, I realized I am the son of slaveholders, and there are sons of slaves out there with my family name. And from that point on, I wanted to meet those people. And it was only as an adult that I began to realize that the family history that I'd been taught was horribly one-sided, probably factually inaccurate, and needed to be examined.
But the thing about it is, a lot of the historical record was written by whites, obviously, here in the South. It was partial, it was fragmented, and a good deal of it hasn't survived. How did you actually go back reconstructing the story of the Tomlinsons and the Tomlinsons?
Well, certainly I started out with the published histories, the ones that were written by whites. And I studied those very closely. And one of the things I realized was that it was not until the 1890s that schools began to teach this revisionist history of how the South's cause was noble and justified by the Constitution.
This is the Lost Cause.
The Lost Cause myth. And it was because you had aging Confederate veterans who were worried about their place in history.
Right.
So they engaged all these school boards and across the state and said, you need to teach history the way we see it. And they succeeded. And that's why we have this neo-Confederate history that tends to dominate the way my grandfather thought about our family history. Knowing that, I then went and looked at the oral histories of freed slaves, and I narrowed them down to Central Texas. I then also basically went around talking to every person over the age of 80 who was African American I could find in Falls County and collected their oral histories and their family tales. For this book, I did over 200 oral histories, all of which are now part of the Baylor Institute of Oral History. And some of them are available on the website, tomlinsonhill.com, where we let people speak for themselves. But all that went into this book.
Were you able to talk to descendants of your family's slaves?
Well, I'm proud that the most famous Tomlinson of all, a running back you may have heard of, named LaDainian Tomlinson, who played for the San Diego Chargers, agreed to an interview. And he agreed to write the foreword of the book. His brother LeVar and his sister Laundria were incredibly generous with their time, as were Terry. And I probably spoke to a dozen black Tomlinsons, all of whom are direct descendants of a Tomlinson Hill slave named George, who was born in Africa in 1820. But what was interesting is that their father was like mine. It was a history that he didn't want to share with them. He didn't want to share how he'd spent his youth as a sharecropper picking cotton. He didn't want to talk about the family slave past. He wanted them to focus on the future. So in many ways, there is this post-civil rights generation of blacks and whites, and I would say of all Americans, who aren't learning their history. And I think that was also motivation for digging into it and writing this book.
I know you've encountered some people who have asked you, both white and black, why do you want to go back to this history? I mean, we're talking about generations that have passed and now people have moved on. How do you answer those who say there's not much we can do about what our ancestors did?
Well, I would point out that I interviewed a woman named Lizzie Mae Tomlinson, who knew her grandfather, who was born into slavery. That's not that long ago. You can go talk to people today who knew people who were slaves. So the idea that it was some distant history is first, I think, factually incorrect. One of the goals of the book is, by showing these families in parallel, one white, one black, is to demonstrate how the events of, Jim Crow in the 1890s still resonate today.
And how would you say that they resonate? I mean, how would you describe them?
As a business columnist, I would say the most obvious is the lack of capital. A black Tomlinson was denied the opportunity to start their own business. They were denied the opportunity to go to a proper school. While my father, in 1950, was attending a beautiful school in Dallas where he had violin lessons and German in elementary school. You know, his contemporary on the black side of the family was Charles Tomlinson, going to a one-room shack on Tomlinson Hill where grades 1 through 8 were taught by 2 teachers and there were 60 kids. And they used outhouses. He did not have the opportunity to build the wealth, to start businesses, to have economic equality. It's not that long ago.
Reconnecting with your past does what to you?
You know, I went through several phases. I think as a child, I was very proud of being the descendant of this aristocratic slave-owning family. As I was working on the book, I felt a sense of shame for what my family did and the oppression that they participated in. And then I kind of looked again and realized, well, you know, there's no such thing as like truly bad or truly good people. There are people who do good and bad things. And that there's something empowering with knowing both the good and the bad about your family history and knowing that you've got a complete picture and that you can move ahead having learned those lessons of the past, both good and bad. You know, when I talk to LeVar and LaDainian, they've told me the same thing, that they're grateful that both the good and the bad of their family history is revealed because now they can move on with those important lessons.
And yet, there was a reason that LeVar's father didn't want to talk about that history. There was something he wanted to protect. The reason I mention that is that the reason a lot of histories are written as they are is obviously to glorify one's past, but also to shield descendants from the burden of blame or the burden of victimhood.
I think Oliver Terry Tomlinson, O.T., LaDainian and LeVar's father, wanted his sons to not feel like victims. He wanted them to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, which they did, and in LaDainian's case, rather spectacularly. They had also created a black community on Tomlinson Hill that still thrives today of about 50 families. Mm-hmm. And this became a refuge, an escape from the larger white society that treated them badly, that discriminated against them and denied them things. And so when you talk to the black Tomlinsons today, they'll tell you how much they love that hill, how safe they feel there, how they feel that's their home, a place where they can go to be safe. And I think by refusing to talk about all of the things that had happened on that hill, it was a way of creating that safe space.
But is there not, I mean, by reopening and reexamining and in essence, recrafting the history that's come down, altered as it was, does that in some way disrespect ancestors who have decided to tailor a family history or to tailor their own stories in a certain way because they think that, perhaps in the case of the black Tomlinsons, they don't belong to anyone?
Now that my book is out, I'm facing this very intense criticism from some parts of my family and some parts of the black family that by revealing all the things that I have about our history, both good and bad, that I'm bringing disrepute on people. But the journalist in me knows that the book would not be effective if I, you know, covered things up, if I ignored important facts, that it would not ring as true and therefore not be as educational and as instructive in how we need to act today and move forward. There are heroes and villains in the book. Sometimes the villains are my family. Sometimes the heroes are people who stood up against the larger society to demand that we be true to our values. You know, everything that's in the book is fact. It's things that people actually did. It's not a piece of fiction. It's heavily, you know, footnoted, so you know where the information is coming from. this is what's necessary to have an honest conversation, is to have an honest set of facts. And that's what I set out to do.
Meaning no criticism, but there are some who would easily, I mean, obviously, argue that unlike South Africa, with its Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where they're fresh off of, I mean, they were literally coming out of apartheid, a considerable amount of time has passed since even Jim Crow was part of, and we're talking maybe 30, 40 years, really, and though the after effects still linger, that a Truth and Reconciliation effort in the United States would pull off scabs and expose scars that perhaps we're ill-equipped to deal with today.
First, as someone who's coming up on 50, I don't like to think of 40 years as that long ago. but I think that addresses my larger point, is that it's almost easier for us to be honest about what happened 40 years ago because we have a little bit of distance from it. It's not, the wounds are not open like they were in South Africa and at the Gacaca courts in Rwanda. We've had some time to let it settle a little bit. And when we deny the facts of our history, and let's be frank here, what we're denying is the history of white people perpetrating oppression on black people. When we don't want to talk about the truth of that, we are denying this other community, the black community, their truth, because they know it, they lived it, and every day we pretend it didn't happen, we are denying them their history, and that's why it doesn't work.
It's not possible for them to claim their history on their own.
If we are to be a United States, one country, no matter what the color of our skin is or where we go to worship, we need to have a shared sense of history, a united history that we can all agree on and that we're all ready to accept.
Having said that, is it possible really for us to have a united history? I mean, in other words, the predicate for going back is in large part the promise of a united people.
History doesn't have to divide us. It divides us if we refuse to accept it. I think it unites us when we choose to accept it. You know, I'm not going to solve all of America's problems with one book. And certainly what I tell people is this is about my family. It's an example of something much, much larger. But it's just one family. And if I could just get a few fewer people to tell me about how their family, they're descended from slaveholders, but their ancestors were good slaveholders, when it's impossible to be a good slaveholder, then I think I will have accomplished at least a small measure of success.
Tomlinson Hill is the name of the book, story of two families who share the Tomlinson name, one white, one black. Chris Tomlinson lives in Austin. He is a columnist for the Houston Chronicle. Thanks so much and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much, David.
For the Texas Standard, I'm David Brown, KUT News.